Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined by Shag Hislop and Stevie Nicol. Look at the excitement on their faces. Just 30 minutes to go until the transfer window slams shut. To keep you up to date with everything that's going on, we also welcome to the programme Frank Leboeuf. Well, he doesn't know as much. Gab Marcotti does, though, as does Julien Laurent. We'll start with a big story, which, of course, has broken over the last couple of hours. Julien Antoine Griezmann back at Atletico Madrid.
Incredible, and not so much the fact that he's going back to Atleti just 2 years after leaving the club, but more the way he's going back on loan, which means that Barcelona gets nothing in exchange apart from an option to buy next summer for 40 million euros, way wow. Below the 120 million euros that they paid for him 2 years ago. We can discuss a bit later why if you're Barcelona, you let again one of your top players going to Atletico Madrid, strengthening their squad and getting nothing in return. But for Griezmann, he wanted the Barcelona nightmare, if you want, to stop. He wanted to go back to Atletico. It was only Atletico for him for the last few days. He'd been hoping that Atleti would move in, and they did today in a very efficient way, it has to be said.
Jules, we're going to get to Griezmann and where he fits in and where it went wrong for Barcelona. But immediately, when I'm sure like most heard that news, they thought, well, why couldn't you have done this a few weeks ago and then kept Lionel Messi?
It's a really good point. We know that, obviously, Antoine Griezmann was wages were enormous at Barcelona, around the 830,000 a week, which is a lot of money. And we know also that Atleti made a few approaches already in this transfer window. Remember the Saul Griezmann swap deal? They were working on something like this to be able to offload Antoine Griezmann from the wage bill. And then maybe that would have enabled them to keep Leo Messi in a way or another. There was also Joao Felix that could have at some point maybe be included in this kind of deal. And in the end, it's just a simple loan with an option to buy, which again is crazy. And again, you have to highlight, and it's a very different team than the one that signed Antoine Griezmann 2 years ago. But you have to say that once again, it's completely mismanagement from Barcelona.
Gav, this is absolutely bonkers, isn't it?
So it is absolutely bonkers. Like we said at the time, there's more to the Messi deal than meets the eye. We haven't seen all the audited figures, but it's hard to believe that, as Jules said, given his wages, you know, we're talking somewhere north of 40 million a season. It's hard to believe that they couldn't have shifted him, even given him away on loan and signed Messi. That said, there may be a little bit of logic to it. You know, you talk about the loss that's made, and I want to bore people with accounting and financial fair play and all this stuff. But the reality is, and I know some outlets are reporting it's a two-year loan with an obligation to buy. Others saying it's a one-year loan, option to buy. Whatever the case is, if they get 40 million euros back for him a year from now and that deal becomes permanent, then in financial terms, their loss is only 8 million, and that's offset by the wages that you're saving. If it's in 2 years' time, believe it or not, they're actually going to make a profit on Antoine Griezmann of around 16 million euros, as well as, of course, saving 2 years' worth of salary. So I think this is how they're going to end up spinning it, saying that they had no choice and all those bad things that Bartomeu had hidden under the sofa. Well, you know, they found them all, and this is the reality. But I agree. I think I have a difficult time explaining why, if you could do this, how this plays into Messi not staying.
Atleti have absolutely won a watch here, haven't they, Stevie?
Oh, my goodness, have they ever. I mean, if somebody had said to Atleti after they had won the title if there was a player that could make you better next year, who would it be?
Yep.
They would probably have said, oh, Antoine Griezmann.
Yep.
He knows how we play. He loves it here. Knows the manager. Knows the club. Knows all the other players. That would be great, but there's no chance of us getting him. Oh, guess what? We've got some mugs in the other part of Spain who are flying by the seat of their pants. And the funny thing is, I mean, grab through in the word logic, but they've just been lucky that they're going to end up getting that money and saving money. It's got nothing to do with planning. Everything's been done by the seat of their pants. And wow, this is, I mean, in a crazy summer of transfers, this is just another mind-boggling one.
We'll have a lot more time to discuss it, Shank. But this makes Atleti favourites, doesn't it? For La Liga, is it that simple?
Well, I think even before the signing of Griezmann, Atleti were or should have been favourites. Mm. It seems no matter what happens the season before, no matter what happens in the summer transfer window between Real Madrid and Barcelona, they always seem to eclipse Atletico Madrid in terms of who the bookies think are going to win the title. But with the addition of Antoine Griezmann, no question, I think that shortens Atletico Madrid's odds. In a season where I thought they started the defence of their title as favourites. Granted, the bookies saw it differently. This moves the needle significantly in that regard, as long as Antoine Griezmann is anything like the Antoine Griezmann we know of Atletico Madrid.
Right.
Not necessarily the Antoine Griezmann of the last 2 years.
Atleti's second favourites, according to the bookies. On the point that Xhaka made, Frank, where did it go wrong for Antoine Griezmann? How did it go wrong so badly at Barcelona? Because obviously we thought, well, he was playing in the shadow of Messi. Once Messi left, he'd be great. He hasn't been great. He's been anonymous. This, of course, one of the players, there was so much expectation around him. Why did it go wrong for him so badly at Barcelona?
Well, it started to go wrong, you know, at the first beginning, because I always say that it was a bad choice, and it was it's a clear failure, and after you go to the psychological aspects of that, where you know you go down, you lose your confidence, you lose your skills, and even if Messi gets away, and then you have free will. Well, you lost something that you have to gain back, and it doesn't come back like that, you know, easily. You have to go back to your shape. You have to go back psychologically on the top, and it didn't happen for him. And maybe it's simply not a club who could suit him. So maybe we'll find his talent back. When you say Atletico is now the favorite because Griezmann is back, yes, of course, if they get back the Griezmann they knew when he was playing for Atletico. If it's the Griezmann we've seen for the past year, it doesn't bring anything on top of what they already have. I wish it will show me otherwise. But really, I don't know why it went like that and why it's a failure. I know that it was a wrong choice, and everybody knew that, not maybe Griezmann and all his agents.
Unmitigated disaster. Is that fair to sum up Griezmann's transfer to Barca, Jules?
Yeah, it's a bit harsh, but I think this is the reality. You can look at the numbers, goals and assists. You can look at how much he cost them, of course, and Gab went through it in terms of wages and in terms of transfer fees and all of that. And yeah, this is the word. I mean, for me, and you know that I don't really like Koeman that much, but there's also a part of responsibility for the manager there. Antoine Griezmann is one of the most willing, flexible players that you would ever see. He's not the one who would say, I don't want to play there, I don't want to do this. He's happy to do anything you want and play anywhere you want him to play. But there's also a time where you need to find the best way of using it. He's a very good player. Don't tell me that he, between Madrid and Barcelona, on that motorway, he became a bad player. This is not possible. And yet, they never found a way of getting the best out of him. And I think that's also part of the problem. And in the end, in a space of few months, they went from a front three of Messi, Griezmann and Suarez to a front three of Braithwaite, De Jong and Memphis Depay. And I'm sorry, this is not just good enough, whether it's the players' fault, the financial issues, Koeman, whatever, but this is not good enough from Barcelona.
You take a look at what Barcelona have done. Of course, in this transfer window, they were keen to get a lot of those big wages off their books. Griezmann, of course, gone now, along with Lionel Messi. Luke de Jong, of course, is the signing that has come in today to lead the line from Sevilla. This is what we're hearing reports of anyway. And I suppose now, Gab, does this mean they can sign or can register Kun Aguero as well?
I don't know. There were reports earlier in the day that they were looking at Dani Olmo as well. Frankly, if the situation is this bad, given Aguero's still going to be out a while, I'd be surprised if they go ahead and do that. But who knows, frankly, at this stage. And I heard Jules there. I agree with him. Although, let's be a little bit more fair. You know, Ansu Fati and Ousmane Dembele are coming back. The cavalry will ride into town, and I think most of the time your front three will be Fati, Dembele, and Depay, which is, you know, at least dignified. And then when you need to lump it into the box, you know, you send on Luke de Jong. And I think you kind of make do with that. But again, without having a full handle on the numbers, and tell you what, right now, I don't even know if Laporta has a full handle on the numbers. It's really, really difficult to say, other than
definitely
the fact
doesn't.
That they now have fewer options and they're a weaker side.
It is, of course, World Cup qualifying. Meanwhile, Antoine Griezmann will have to wait until he makes his return to Atletico Madrid. Those games are live on ESPN Plus throughout the campaign. We've got Sweden against Spain for you. That's on Thursday, 2:45 Eastern on ESPN Plus. Of course, Real Madrid excited to get a star from Ligue 1. They didn't get Mbappe, but they did get Eduardo Camavinga. This, of course, something which developed, it seemed, very quickly over the last couple of days, Jules.
That's right, Dan. Especially last night, there was a big breakthrough in the conversation, the negotiation. He had only 1 year left on his contract, a bit like Mbappe, and Rennes didn't want to lose him on a free, and like PSG, and he also, I think, wanted the move. He hadn't played much this season because of the uncertainty over his future. He's only 18, but he's an incredible talent. And I think for that price, the 30 million euro that Real Madrid paid, there's bonuses, it could go up to a bit more. But they got themselves a bargain, because there's nothing he cannot do in midfield. And yet he's still very young, and he will need to learn and to work on a lot of things and to improve. But the way he drives the ball forward, the intelligence, the tactical awareness, the left foot, of course, the long-range passing, the short-range passing, even physically, he's already quite strong. Only at 18 years old, it's I think, a fantastic signing, really is.
Do you like him, Frank?
Yes, I'm very fond of him. He didn't have a good season last season, but the season before, he showed all his strengths and talent and the possibility that he has. He's a good seed. He's going to grow up, and it's a very good transfer fee for Real Madrid. It's a good club where he will have the chance to play and show his talent. I'm pretty sure he's going to do well. And as Jules said and named all his skills, he's going to go to success. That's for sure.
Will he start, Jules?
I still think that the Casemiro, Modric and Kroos midfield three is your starting midfield three. Then you've got Valverde as your fourth option and in the rotation. And then I think Eduardo comes in then, which is fair. I don't think he expects to play 60 games either. He's there to learn. But already, if you think towards the future, once Modric especially and then Kroos as well moves on or retire or leave the club, then you've got Valverde, Camavinga already there to take over. And I think this is fantastic. They complement each other so well. If you look at Valverde's assets and qualities and Camavinga's, they're perfect. And one is right-footed, the other one is left-footed. And if you find the right holding midfielder, which could well be Casemiro for a few more years now, then it's already there. So fantastic talent, not starting every single game, but he will be very useful for them this season. And I think it would bring already a lot to this team.
No Mbappe, though, Jules. Reports that they turned down PSG a late $200 million bid from Real Madrid. Is that true?
So PSG are denying it right now. Our sources on the Spanish side at ESPN said that they made that verbal offer. I don't know if verbal counts for Paris, I don't know, but we've been saying for weeks now that they didn't want to sell him in the first place. Yes, at some point they opened the door and we thought that Real Madrid could get something out of there. But PSG also said it's on our terms. If you meet our terms, you will get Kylian. If you don't meet our terms, if it's not under our conditions, it's not going to happen. And again, I don't think for them it was just about the money. I think they wanted a replacement, and if they could not find one, and they didn't, it was harder for them to let him go too. But it was a big, big power game from the beginning, with bluff from both sides, with stuff said in the media. I mean, the tic-tac from El Chiringuito for weeks and weeks now was even a running joke at some point. But in the end, he will be in Paris for another year, and then he will leave on a free in a year time, probably to go to Madrid, and they will eventually get him. But this time, they didn't win the battle that they usually win when it comes to transfer in this way.
Gab, what's crazier? A team bidding 200 million euros for a player that's only got 1 year left on his contract, or a team turning down 200 million euros for a player with only 1 year left on his contract?
I genuinely don't know. And look, I try to look for logic here, and I say, well, maybe the logic is that, you know, Real Madrid knew these bids were going to be turned down. And as we've said before, that this is just a way to link Mbappe closer to them. At the same time, Paris Saint-Germain can go and justify it and say, oh no, but we're still confident that we can get him to extend his deal, and we're going to talk to him. I think it was the owner's brother, I think, who tweeted, and said something to that effect, saying, oh no, we're going to talk to him, and you know, we hope to extend his deal and keep him here. It's a really, really tough one. It wouldn't have made sense for me if this deal had gone through. Obviously, people are going to ask about financial fair play. How can Paris Saint-Germain afford this? Are UEFA going to look at financial fair play rules when they kind of come back into effect? Because right now they're suspended, of course. If you're cynical, you might say maybe the Qatari ownership's time horizon only lasts through December 2022, when the World Cup takes place. And then after that, they up sticks and leave and sell what's left of the club. And so maybe they don't really care. I genuinely don't know how they're going to go and magic a solution up, a solution that's going to appear fair to everybody involved.
Frank, you're pointing at your face. Why?
Now, because it cracks me up, you know. You have to understand who you're talking to. You're talking to about Qatar. You're talking about a country where 200 million would be for you and I $1. It's nothing. There is a reason why they have Neymar, Messi, Mbappe, Ramos, because they are so rich, they can buy everybody. And next summer or next winter, they can make an offer to Mbappe that it won't be possible for him to say no, because it could make him the richest player on the planet. So there is nothing we can count for them more than winning the Champions League. It's their goals. They're going to do it, whatever it costs. And they don't care about giving so much money or denying 200 million, because it's Qatar. It's not PSG, it's Qatar. And I know those people, and they're very stubborn, and they're going to keep on doing what they want to do to make sure they're going to win the Champions League.
Interesting point Frank brings up there, Jules. Obviously, the general consensus is Mbappe will go to Real Madrid on a free in the summer. When you've got unlimited funds, as PSG have got, how much money would be enough, if any, to persuade Mbappe not to go to Spain?
But we've said already, Dan, it's not about the money either for him. They're already offering, he's on 20 million a year, he goes up to 35, which is the same as Neymar, which is slightly lower than Messi. But I don't think he's that. We've explained the idea that he wants to be at the center of everything. He wants to be the poster boy. He wants to be the big star. And certainly in Paris, there will always be Messi for the next 2 years at least. And then at some point, Neymar around, even if Kylian is the biggest player in that team and the most efficient and the most important in a way with all his goals. But there will still be something missing, I think, there. That's why he's saying he's not going to extend. And that's why I think, of course, you have to try again. And you have to get Messi involved and Sergio Ramos and Neymar, all those players trying to convince him to stay, even if it's just another year. But I don't think he will sign now. I don't think he will extend. It's not in his interest anymore. He's much better off not signing it. And then in 12 months' time, having all the top clubs knocking at his door, and then he can choose the best and where he wants to go. And that's probably going to be Real Madrid. But if he wants to go to Liverpool or Man City or Juventus or Bayern Munich, whoever else, they will all be there, because he will be a free agent. So as much as I would love him to sign a new deal and the club too, and they will try, of course, but I really don't think it will happen, regardless of how much they can offer on the table.
So what happens, Jules, over the next 12 months? We saw him, of course, scoring the two goals in the game at the weekend. Seemed to be thoroughly enjoying himself. This is all fine and dandy as long as he's scoring. When he misses, the fans are going to be very, very quick, aren't they, to get on his back. And no matter how cool you are, that's going to put added pressure on him.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, we saw him being booed before, remember, before the Strasbourg game where Franck was at the Parc des Princes. But then they didn't boo him at Reims on Sunday, for example, and he scored the two goals. He's happy to stay. He's happy to have this season with Messi and Neymar and with the team, which was one of the problems for Real Madrid, because usually in those situations, and you know it well, Dan, they ask the player that they want to go to the clash and to not play and to sulk and to force a move out. With Kylian, that didn't work. That's not what he wanted. He was happy to go to Madrid if the two clubs could find an agreement and PSG would get some money for him. But he was also happy to stay. And he said to PSG, I'm happy to stay, but you will get nothing from me in 12 months' time. So it's up to you. Do what you want, but I'm happy to stay here. And that was one of the problems, why he didn't go to Madrid in the end. But I think if he scores, if the team does well, which they're already doing in a certain extent, it's still early, but they do, I think the fans would be fine. They also understand that he wants to go to a bigger club and everything. And he would have given 5 years of his career to Paris. So I don't think it would be too much of an issue with the fans.
Gab, I know you've written about this from a Real Madrid perspective. Not getting Mbappe could actually be a bit of a blessing in disguise. Use that money next summer to bring in people to support Kylian Mbappe. And maybe you could look at the fact they brought Camavinga in, they brought Alaba in. Of course, got a rid with some players on big wages. Hasn't been too bad for Real Madrid, has it, this transfer window?
Yeah, I mean, look, if you're Real Madrid, you always set the bar extremely high, right? So in the end, the fact that we're talking about Atleti being favorites to win La Liga suggests, well, hang on a minute, by our standards, that is bad. But if you take a longer term view, then you're right. It's not that bad a situation, right? You're going to have Isco, Marcelo and Bale leaving the club next year, which just frees up a ton of money. You've already got Camavinga. Jules talked about it there. You know, you're pretty much set at left back, whether it's Mendy or whether it's Miguel. You've got players in place, and you're going to have a lot of money left over to go and take a real run at Mbappe and a real run at other players you might want to add in other areas of the pitch. Right? We've all been through that, whether it's Pogba, whether, you know, who knows, Goretzka, all those guys who, as of right now, go out of contract. So, no, I think Florentino has done a good job at selling people on this idea, and they're in a good place if their time horizon is more than one season. If they look at the end of the season and they're like, oh, we finished second or third, and you know, we went out in the quarterfinals of the Champions League, which is a real possibility, you know, let's tear it all down again, then no. But the upshot is they're going to have a lot more flexibility with wages come next year.
As I mentioned, of course, World Cup qualifiers this week. France taking on Bosnia-Herzegovina. That game live on ESPN Plus at 2:45 Eastern. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire, you need Indeed. Let's take a look at the Premier League now. And Manchester United have had a really good transfer window, haven't they? It confirmed that Daniel James has left the club. He made that switch from United to Leeds. Also confirmed today Cristiano Ronaldo is officially back at United. He had a nice long speech saying how excited he was to get back. At the end of it, Sir Alex, this one is for you. It's fun, isn't it, Stevie, to have Ronaldo back at United?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see the reception that he gets. I mean, you talk about an atmosphere.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're a Manchester United fan, you are absolutely going crazy. And if you've got a ticket for the first game that he's going to be at, you are going to be the happiest supporter on the planet.
It is genuine. Even from people who hate United, this storyline is impossible to get embraced by.
It is, for so many reasons. I think Manchester United, regardless of how you feel about them, plays such a significant role in English football, a role that's been diminished since Sir Alex Ferguson left, and United have struggled to retake. Now, all of a sudden, you have Cristiano Ronaldo coming back. He links into the Sir Alex Ferguson years and the success that they had, and certainly he had at the club. And just from an exposure and commercialization angle, it's great for Manchester United, it's great for the league. I think everybody benefits in one way or another and brings that excitement and focus back to the Premier League, where, as I say, I think in some respects, it maybe had been lost without Ronaldo.
You think that everyone would be on board that this is great? One of our guests not, though. Jules, I was listening to you on the Gab and Jules podcast, and you think this signing may not all be flowers and sunshine and rainbows.
That's not what I said. That's not true.
You said you can't see where he fits in on the pitch. They're going to fail up with him in the squad.
But I think this is a fair debate to have. Okay, you could not tell me right now how United will play with him, what formation, what kind of pattern. I mean, patterns of play with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, they're two big words. But anyway, let's keep it simple. We don't know yet. With Gab, we had this great debate. He's probably better with the front two. Okay, that's fine with me. You can play him with Cavani or with Greenwood up front. Where is Bruno then? You play him behind in the diamond midfield and Bruno as a 10. I'm not sure if, I don't think this is Bruno's best position. So I think there's a lot of questions to be answered on where does Ronaldo fit the best? How do you play around him? Who do you play around him? What formation do you even play? And then we can think about build the play and patterns of play and all of that, which before Ronaldo arrived, we haven't seen too much either. So I think it's fascinating. I didn't say it would not work out. I said, I'm really curious to see what Solskjaer is going to do, and suddenly the pressure on him now to deliver with this squad and find the best way of using Cristiano.
What do you think, Stevie?
I agree with Jules. Listen, he's going to score goals. We know he's going to score goals.
Right.
But I would suggest that if he was playing for City, he would score more goals. Because home, away, regardless of where City play, they play a type of football that has every single opposition on the back foot at the edge of the box.
Right.
So there's going to be chances. Manchester United, however, don't particularly play that way. You know, they have a decent line. They sometimes squeeze the opposition high, sometimes they drop off. So I don't think he's going to get as many chances at Manchester United as he would have at City. And I agree with Jules.
I think it depends on how they play. I don't think the debate is whether he's going to get more chances at United or City. It's where he fits in. And right now, I see him as a direct replacement in the role that Edinson Cavani played all of last season. And I thought Cavani, when he featured, was simply outstanding, transformed United in so many ways. And I'll be honest, we're talking two aging strikers here. You give me Ronaldo now or Cavani now, I take Ronaldo. So I see it as an upgrade.
Who takes the penalties, Frank? Ronaldo or Bruno?
Well, I guess that will be a Portuguese debate, and I'm pretty sure, you know, the winner would be Cristiano. I can bet on that, you know. And Fernandes will have to show something, you know. He's been absolutely fantastic for Manchester United, but with the national team, he's been in the shade of Ronaldo. So he will have to step up to make sure he's one of the leaders. He's the leader of Manchester United since he signed. But the boss, the god of Portugal, is back. So Fernandes, Bruno Fernandes, will have to show his strength.
Psychologically. Take a look then how the bookies have things set as it stands with all the transfers counted with regards to who will win the Premier League. Manchester United fourth, still behind City, Chelsea and Liverpool. We discussed this before, Stevie, yeah? And you said you'd have United ahead of Liverpool?
Yes.
If you're the bookies?
Absolutely.
What about you, Frank?
No, I think I'm still going with that, with those numbers, that rank. I put City, Chelsea, Liverpool and Manchester United. That doesn't change anything.
Even with Ronaldo?
Even with Ronaldo. What? I think Manchester United showed us last weekend that they didn't solve their defensive problems and that it's not Ronaldo who's going to change anything.
They kept a clean sheet, Frank.
Yes, but because of De Gea making some miracles, you know, you have to be fair with me, please.
Gab, for you, United fourth favourites, is that still right?
Yeah, for me, that's still the case. I mean, I wasn't sure about Liverpool, but then I saw their performance against Chelsea, and then you weigh in the fact that, you know, if they won't have the injuries, presumably they had last year, and Trent Alexander-Arnold's regaining his mojo and everything, and I think they have a better manager as well. So for me, Cristiano may narrow the gap, but I share all of Jules's reservations and concerns about where he's going to fit in. In the end, of course, yeah, you fit him in somewhere, but if that means you lose Sancho, you know, last season he played almost exclusively in a front two. United will not be playing a front two this year unless they want to start benching players. So for me, the issues are still there. And also, it's a really, really big gap to the big to the top three. I mean, Liverpool, City, and Chelsea are really, really good. Forget what the table said last year. These are three really, really good sides, and there's a lot of ground to make up.
Cristiano Ronaldo's Portugal in action on Wednesday. That's tomorrow.
Is it?
Tomorrow's Wednesday?
Yeah, yeah. Tomorrow's Wednesday.
2:45 Eastern on ESPN+.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Let's talk a bit about Arsenal, shall we? They have spent a lot of money in this transfer window. I think I'm right as we were on air that they spent more than anybody else. Ben White, of course, making that big move from Brighton. Odegaard from Real Madrid. Ramsdale coming as well. There's a goalkeeper. A couple of signings today. Tomiyasu coming in. Jules, have they done enough, do you think, Arsenal, to try and right the ship? Because looking at those players there, none of them particularly would get me that excited if I was an Arsenal fan.
Yeah, maybe if you don't watch Bologna, or if you, Odegaard, they saw, but maybe Brighton even, they would not know much about Ben White and Tomiyasu, for example. Tomiyasu, who's a really good signing for the amount they pay, for his age, for all the qualities that he has and his versatility too, because he can play as a centre-back, he can play as a right-back. He even played, I think, for Bologna as a defensive midfielder. I think there's something really good in there, and he's only 22 years of age. So you can see what they're trying to do, and we said yesterday on the show about this is a transition period because they need to rebuild not just their starting 11, but the whole squad. And this is where it starts, with younger players, with versatile players. Of course, it's not a Lukaku or a Cristiano or Kevin De Bruyne or players like that. But I think that there's talent in there. Yes, they will need a bit of time to adapt to the Premier League and all of that. But I think there's some interesting signings in there to compete right now for the top four. And no, of course not. But I think you're in the right direction with those kind of signings, more than a Willian, for example, or those more aging players that you did in the past.
In theory, that's nice, yeah? We're going younger, we're in a transitional season, you know, we're looking to bring youth up. Brilliant. But the problem is, your squad as it stands don't have enough leaders, if you like, on that pitch to be able to help these kids?
Well, that's, if you're Arteta, that's what you're thinking. If you're the sporting director, as Ed Do, I believe, he's painting a picture for all around them about we can't go out and spend 120 million on a superstar that's going to transform it. We have to think further ahead. Now, that's great. It's a great story. Mm. But it's not a good story for the manager now.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't have... Listen, this guy, he might have two games. They play Norwich and Burnley.
Yeah.
If they lose both those games, he's done.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, it's sensible. It's looking ahead. It's looking to the future. But the person who loses out in this is Arteta.
Yeah, bottom of the table, no goals, no points to Xhaka. You're bringing in these young, exciting players, but still.
Which, as a strategy, is fine. And if that's how you're trying to sell this, okay, I get it. The trouble, my issue with Arsenal is Arsenal's approach has been so scattergun and sporadic over the years that now you're trying to sell it as we're bringing in youth and we're going to freshen up the squad and we're thinking long term. And you just think, okay. When Mikel Arteta came in, he was hamstrung, apparently, by Mesut Ozil, who was earning so much money that they couldn't bring in players because they all wanted Mesut Ozil money. And the first thing that he had to do was get rid of him, which he did. And we all applauded him for that. But you then follow that up by signing Willian on big money and putting Aubameyang on the contract that he did. Again, scattergun. You're not sure what it is they're doing. And as a result, I think Arsenal have just fallen into this kind of malaise where you don't know what to expect of them. The squad doesn't have any identity. Arteta has lost his power. So now it seems like a sensible approach. But Arteta's not there long. Surely, regardless of what happens in the next two games,
right.
Arteta's on such thin ice. You know, if he makes it to the end of the season, it'll be an absolute miracle. So now you have this approach with a manager and you have no idea who's going to be next. Sorry if I'm a cynic here, but I am not convinced. I am not buying anything Arsenal or their board are selling me.
So Arsenal spent a lot of money this transfer window. Quite the opposite, really, for Liverpool, who have been very quiet. Konate, of course, the only signing that has come in. How bad has this transfer window been from a Liverpool perspective, Stevie?
Boy, it depends who you want to look at it. Listen, when you're doing well, you want to sign players, make yourself stronger. Well, you can look at it from the point of view that we're talking about Mbappe, we're talking about Pogba, whose contracts are all running out. If we look at it from the point of view of, well, Liverpool know that they're going to have the core group that took them to a Champions League win when they've re-signed Henderson and Virgil van Dijk in particular. So, as far as strengthening from outside, it doesn't look great. But as far as strengthening your position for a period of time, plus you've got the kid Elliot, who looks as though he's going to be a player. So, I would say
Stevie, you've been a bit Liverpool TV here, haven't you?
No,
you always
average.
Say, when you're winning,
strengthen.
You've got to bring in. You've got to bring in players. Yeah, but then you've just waffled on about Jordan Henderson and Van Dijk.
I'm sorry for waffling.
Signing a new contract. Liverpool.
So you're telling me that that's not a good move that they've made, signing these players. The PSG are going to lose arguably their best player because they didn't re-sign him.
But it's a move that won't win them the title. It's a move that will leave them short of going to the Champions League and winning it again. That's the issue, because everyone around them has strengthened.
I'm not disagreeing with what you've said.
Right.
I just told you it depends how you want to look at it.
Well, yes.
They haven't strengthened, but at the same time, they've actually made sure that the core that won them the Champions League and the Premier League are going to be around for the next two or three years. And they've still got another window coming in January. Well, guess what? Real Madrid are going to get Mbappe in January.
No, they won't. They'll go into the summer. PSG aren't going to let him go in January, are they?
They'll sign him in January. He'll be signing in a contract. It's called a pre-contract. In January. Okay.
Shaka.
What do you want me to say? You want me to say, oh no, we're going to get relegated.
No, I just...
We get no chance. It's terrible.
Are you
telling me, with the squad Liverpool have now, they will not win the Premier League?
They won't win the Premier League.
Okay. By the way, make sure you tape that.
Wait,
I want to see the tape.
You've got them finishing fourth.
If Liverpool won the Premier League, right, would you be flabbergasted?
Yes, yeah,
Why would you be flabbergasted?
You've just asked
Hold
me a question,
a second.
I just gave
Hold
you
on a
answer.
Second. Alisson, Trent Alexander-Arnold,
yes,
Virgil
yes.
van Dijk.
Yeah, I know.
Hassan Kanate.
Yes.
They've still got Robertson, they've got Henderson, they've got Fabinho.
Yep.
Yeah, I know the Liverpool team. So why would you be flabbergasted?
Because they rely so much on those key players. Van Dijk picks up another injury, you're done. It's as simple as that, isn't it? And I don't think you could say that about the other teams.
But I'm not saying that.
Right.
I'm not saying that about the other team. You've just said you'd be flabbergasted if they won the Premier League.
Yeah, I think I would.
You really would? Yeah, with that team?
No, I think I would.
All right.
But you do have them finishing fourth.
Well, hold on a second. If you remember, the reason I had them finishing fourth was because we didn't know what Van Dijk was going to be like.
Right.
We didn't know what Henderson was going to be like.
We still don't know.
We're not convinced, are we?
Yeah, you see, that's why I'd be flabbergasted if they won. Okay, are we moving on?
So you're deciding, they've only played three games, but you've decided. You've decided.
No, I would be flabbergasted at the start of the season.
All right. Well, let's hope we can replay this.
Oh,
and listen to the nonsense you're coming up with.
Speaking of replaying nonsense, at the start of the show, we spent a long time talking about Antoine Griezmann going to Atletico Madrid. We're hearing there have been developments. Gab Marcotti, what are those developments?
So the window closed just a few minutes ago as we're taping this, and there's plenty of reports that the deal has fallen through.
Wow.
And it was a deal that of course, was reported initially in France, picked up by the Madrid press, Barcelona press, a little bit more cautious on this. And with Griezmann falling through, of course, much to the disappointment of Barcelona fans, they won't be getting Luke de Jong either. And apparently, and these are early reports, this could all change, part of the reason is that the Saul to Chelsea deal has also fallen through. So you assume no loan fee for Atletico Madrid, that they'll still have Saul's wages, which then maybe makes it more difficult for them to complete the Griezmann deal, which in turn means no Luke de Jong, which I know is what everybody's really interested about. but it did seem to come entirely out of the blue. Griezmann's sister, who's also his agent, apparently on the phone with Matteo Alemany at Barcelona in the last 20, 30 minutes. El Chiringuito reporting that. And they all look absolutely stunned that they weren't able to get this deal over the line.
So, Frank, how are you feeling if you're Antoine Griezmann about now?
Oh my God! I guess very bad because I guess he made up his mind and ready to already overcome all his sadness of not being able to do well in Barcelona. So now you're ready to step up and say, okay, I'm going to give everything to Atletico Madrid. I'm with the national team, so I'm going to go back after those three games. I'm going to go back to Madrid and everything's going to work well, like it used to be, and suddenly at midnight you have a phone call from your sister. Say, well, you know what? You're going to stay in Barcelona. Well, I guess I want to see the game tomorrow against Bosnia Herzegovina from Griezmann. I'm pretty sure it won't be that good.
Stevie, if you're in that situation, you know that the club were happy to get rid of you.
Yeah.
And now you're going back into that locker room.
I don't think he's going to sleep tonight. He's going to be lying in his bed, looking at the ceiling, trying to motivate himself into being professional and giving it all he's got. But as you said, he's going to walk in the dressing room and some wise guy is going to crack a joke about, well, what are you doing here? I mean,
that's true.
Which actually might help him.
Yes.
But there's no question there'll be tension around and his, my goodness, his, as I said, he'll be lying looking at the ceiling tonight wondering what is going on.
Jules, obviously this is live. We're trying to fill in the gaps as we go along here. Do you agree with Gab? The sentiment is that because the Saul deal fell through, that had then a domino effect?
Yes, exactly. Domino effect, and also the fact that they ran out of time. And we then go back to one of the point that we raised at the beginning of the show is why so late? Why did you start this negotiations, this deal at what, 6 o'clock on the deadline day, on transfer deadline day? Why Saul, who's been on the market all summer, was so late as well to be moved somewhere? And again, I think this is beyond me. And I guess for Atleti, it's not as bad as for Barcelona and Griezmann, because for them, it's really bad. Both of them, both Barca and Griezmann. For Atleti, they still have Correa, they still have Suarez, they still have Joao Felix. So offensively, they would be okay. It would have been better with Griezmann. But for Barca and Griezmann, when they thought they were finally there of not having to be involved with each other, you know what? He's still there. His wages is still there. And his bad form, poor form is still there too.
Here's a question I ask you twice a year, probably, Gab. Why do clubs leave it so late? Why in this situation would you even risk it?
Well, because there's a lot of money at stake. And obviously, if you, it's like in any negotiation, you know, if you slow roll the other guy, you hope to get a better deal. You also have situations, players get hurt and whatnot. I mean, the funny thing in this one is that, you know, Jules mentioned all the forwards that Atletico Madrid have. Well, they signed Mateus Cunha like a week ago and, you know, spent money on him from Hertha Berlin. Money that, hey, look, they could have used to make the Griezmann deal happen. I mean, I know they're not exactly like for like replacements, but they're still forwards. So it's stuff like that, you know, makes things seem a little bit more mysterious. If Barcelona were willing to do a deal for Griezmann a month ago and they were, you know, serious about it, then maybe Cunha never materializes at Atletico Madrid, and maybe we're not having this conversation right now. So, you know, it's an art form. Sometimes you want to get your business done super early. Sometimes you get great deals at the very end of the window. But if you're going to take the latter route, then you risk getting burned.
Barcelona isn't the worst place to be stuck, though, is it, Shane?
No, it's not. But, well, it's not for the general person. No, but for I don't see how it's seen as a holiday destination for Antoine Griezmann here. I think this is an absolute disaster for Antoine Griezmann. And listen, from the time that Antoine Griezmann and that Saul transfer was linked earlier in the summer, you knew that Saul would play a part in whatever happened with Antoine Griezmann. Now, and maybe this is a question for the journalists to answer, but I just wonder how much of this falls on Antoine Griezmann and his camp. In that, I felt that they knew they were holding all the trump cards around the Lionel Messi signing or re-signing for Barcelona, as you want to put it. So while I'm happy to move, I'm not happy to lose out on any money, and you know the kind of power you hold because you're holding up Messi. Messi moves. So now all of a sudden, you don't have that trump card to play anymore. But you're seen as villain number one. Unless Antoine Griezmann scores 40 or 50 goals this season, the fans are going to hammer him every single opportunity they get. So he's lost his trump cards. His confidence is shattered. He's whether Messi is there or not, he's not going to be the player that we remember from Atletico Madrid. So therefore, now you realize, I have to move. And I am willing to be flexible in making it happen. Don't wait until the 11th hour to be that flexible. And now all of a sudden, and I know this comes down to Atletico Madrid and whatever happened with Chelsea around the Saul move, that falls in, now you stuck. And again, unless Griezmann scores 50 goals, it is going to be a nightmare day in, day out for him in Barcelona.
Do you agree, Jules?
Unfortunately, I do. And again, we talked about what kind of mindset he will have for the game tomorrow with France. But even for the rest of the season, I think mentally he was so prepared, so ready to go. And the fact that he has to stay and work with Koeman again. And I don't think the rest of the squad is a problem because he's made friends in that dressing room. The problem is that it's just not happening with the manager. It's not working out for him. Memphis would be the main guy now, and he's been delivering so far this season. He's been great. And you can see the contrast so much with Antoine. It's going to be so, so difficult. And there will be loads of games, and he will play, and he will score a few goals, and maybe even get back to some kind of form. But still, we will all know that he wanted so badly, so desperately to go, to leave, and especially to go back to Atleti. And the fact that it's not happening now, it's a huge blow.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
So no Saul to Chelsea, no Koundé to Chelsea either, Gab. We were expecting both of those moves, weren't we, over the last couple of days. What went wrong?
Well, with Saul, I think, you know, we're going to find out. I think it might have to do with some players that Chelsea were looking to shift. Obviously, as we know, there's a really, really big squad, and there's guys that they have to get out on loan every year. With Koundé, I thought at the end, when Sevilla turned them down, I thought it was being a little bit of some Monchi magic there, you know, where he turns it down to try to get more money, maybe something closer to his release clause, or maybe a young player involved in the deal to get closer to it. But apparently that wasn't the case. Sevilla saying, no, sorry, we don't have time to buy Koundé's replacement, which we would need to do because we don't like to leave things late. And Chelsea didn't come back with an improved offer. So that deal, which looked like it would be logical and could go through, apparently on hold, at least until January.
Who will they miss more, Jules? Saul or Koundé?
It's a good point. It's a good question, Dan. I think both, because this is the two positions that they really need to strengthen. I think in midfield, with Conte's fitness being a bit fragile, let's put it that way, with the little niggles or injuries that he's had, and we saw that again against Liverpool at the weekend, you need maybe another body there, clearly, on top of Kovacic and Jorginho and Conte. And I think Saul would have been perfect for that. The fact that he's not there will add a bit to the headache maybe at times for Tuchel. And defensively, yes, they work really well together. The structure is perfect. They know exactly what to do. But I think Koundé is an upgrade on an Azpilicueta, for example, or even on a Christensen, I think, because he's really that good and still so young. So I think they will both really be missed by Chelsea this season.
Would you be flabbergasted if Chelsea win the league, Stevie?
Absolutely not.
Good enough.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Even though they didn't get these two deals done.
Do you know, I questioned, at the start of the season, I questioned Azpilicueta and Silva about their age. But at the weekend against Liverpool, we saw how organised they are. And OK, yes, maybe you may be getting on in years, but boy, your experience doesn't half come into play in situations like that. So Chelsea can beat you playing football. They can beat you by defending. And as we said, going forward from the middle of the park, they can be pretty devastating. So, no, wouldn't be flabbergasted at all if they won the Premier League.
Gab, we're hearing reports that Saul might be back on.
There is a grace period. It's clear as mud right now. But the grace period has to do with when paperwork gets submitted, when it gets processed.
Goodness me.
So contradictory reports in Spain saying that Saul's paperwork might have been done in time. Now, I know the obvious follow-up question is, ooh, does that mean that the Griezmann deal to Atleti's back on as well, since we talked of a domino? And unfortunately, I cannot answer that at this time.
No.
Because I am talking to you on the air and not making phone calls.
Oh, come on, Gab, sort it out. And we're going to keep you on the air as well, because it's the first time I've had you on and Stevie on since the Liverpool-Chelsea game. Stevie sent me a text saying, what's Gab going on about? Talking about the fact that this wasn't a penalty, Gab. I think all and sundry have agreed that it was indeed a spot kick. Have you changed your mind since?
No, I think it's down to the interpretation of the referee. It's down to whether you think he makes his, the rule specifically says, whether he makes his body bigger. It's in FIFA's laws of the game. And if you believe he does, then that's all that matters. You know, intent doesn't, the rules on this are pretty clear. To me, it felt harsh, but I don't have an issue with him giving the penalty. I do have an issue with him looking in a still frame. I don't understand the purpose of that.
So if you bat the ball away, is that a red card? That's what I was asking myself. And the answer would be yes.
Well, but his arm moves after he... What you need to look at is, does he stop the ball from going into the goal? Where if his arm moves afterwards isn't necessarily relevant here.
Frank?
But that's not why he gave the penalty.
Yeah, I completely agree with Gab, you know, because I thought at first sight, you know, that James was moving his arm to make sure the ball doesn't go in. But in fact, it's after the ball touches his arm that he moved his arm. So there is no movement to make his body bigger. That's what I say. I had nothing against that penalty. I think the red card is maybe harsh, and maybe that's the rule and the law, so nothing much to say. And until now that you showed it on the slow motion, I say, well, I see his arm moving after, so it's maybe a reflex. So do you punish a reflex? I'm not sure, especially after that the ball touched his arm. I don't know.
I have no idea what they're talking about.
Oh, there you go.
It's a bit of straightforward.
Well, just
it's a bit
look,
of straightforward
look at the television,
arrow, by the way.
Maybe.
Look at the television, Stephen.
Well, I don't know.
I tell you,
yeah,
I've watched
the game, maybe. Watch the action.
Freaky,
you know?
Come on. I've watched that 1,000 times. You know, we always talk about this nonsense about intent. Clearly, the intent is to stop it going in using his arm.
Right. That's it.
What else do you need?
Where are we going from here? Tottenham. All right, then. Of course, perfect. So far, 3 wins out of 3 so far this season. Harry Kane stays. Have we got a graphic in? And there it is. Brian Gill, of course, who came on as a substitute at the weekend. Emerson Royale made that move from Barcelona today. That was confirmed. How would you sum up Spurs' business this summer so far, Gab? Well, this summer.
Look, I think the single biggest thing was dominated by Harry Kane, right? And the big call that they made, that where they said, no, even at his age, we want to keep Harry Kane and we want him more than 120 million. Now, kind of the numbers guy in me says, ooh, that was silly. On the other hand, I can understand why Daniel Levy did that. And in the here and now, I think that matters. I think, I don't know what the relationship with the fans is going to be like, but I know Harry Kane's a professional, and when he goes out there and plays and scores goals, I think they're going to be better. I like the Brian Heal move. We haven't seen him play at all yet, or maybe we just played like a minute. I think Brian Heal and Romero, between them, have played something like 4 minutes. Emerson Royale obviously hasn't played at all. Mm. But they got Serge Aurier out, which is something that they were keen to do. And we see where they are. This is necessarily going to be another transition season for Spurs. But tell you what, they haven't conceded a goal yet.
Yep.
That's good. When you don't concede a goal with Dyer and Skip and Tanganga and at the back, that's not bad.
Steve, you'll shout and say, well, that's not going to continue.
Well, and basically under Mourinho, that's how it started as well. And it didn't continue. So I'm kind of expecting the same thing to happen. You can't rely on the players that we're talking about for a season.
Right.
You can't.
At the back we're talking about.
Yes, defensively, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Sanchez, Dyer, you can't rely on them week in and week out. And that's what happened under Mourinho. They started off defending really well, tight ship, looking great, and then it just fell apart.
But Harry Kane is still there. And if I'm a Spurs fan, you know, despite everything that's happened, I'm delighted with that fact. And, of course, buoyed by the fact we got the perfect start to the season.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, Harry Kane has established himself as the face of that club over recent years. So you understand Spurs' own apprehension about him leaving. You understand the excitement of him staying. But it doesn't address their issues. This is a team that is still, their ambition is still to finish in the top four, and anything else is kind of seen as a failure. And as we sit right now, for the reasons that Stevie just detailed, I don't think this is a team that can finish in the top four.
Frank, where do you stand on Spurs?
Well, you know, it's a perfect world, and I agree with Stevie and Shaka. Everything's perfect now, but I don't see them, you know, finishing, you know, in the top four. According to what I saw last year and the player that they have, it's a very good news that Harry Kane stays. I don't know how mentally, psychologically, he will react to the fact that he had to stay, but he's professional, so I think he's going to do well. But again, I don't see Tottenham, you know, doing or staying at the top during the season. At some point, I think they're going to fall on.
You talk about West Ham, Shaq?
Sure.
They made one of the biggest transfers of the day, didn't they? With Vlasi coming across for 30 million euros. Obviously, they've started the season well. What are you looking at me like that for?
I couldn't remember when he was at Everton.
Right.
I couldn't remember him.
And Koeman and then Big Sam.
That would have to be a red flag, the fact that he'd been in the Premier League.
No, I disagree.
You can't remember him.
I disagree. He comes in under Koeman at, 20 years old, 21 years old, something like that. Then Big Sam comes in. He's not that kind of footballer. He's not a Big Sam footballer. And he had to move on. And given the fact that, surprisingly, West Ham missed out on Jesse Lingard, I thought that...
Yeah.
Just that logically for the club, for both clubs, for the player that had to happen this window, you understand them going for an attacking midfielder, and he ticks those boxes. But to Stevie's point, I don't see how not fitting in with Sam Allardyce
right.
is a red flag, given the football that West Ham are now playing under David Moyes. It's just two different. It's two different games altogether.
And Jules, why didn't they get Jesse Lingard?
It's a good question. I think he really wanted to have a go at United and see if he could get into the rotation, what kind of minutes he could get. We saw him against Southampton coming on for the last 10 or 15 minutes. Not that this should be enough or will be enough for him, but certainly I think there was a feeling that between now and January, it would be good for him to see what Solskjaer would give him. And I think Solskjaer was quite keen to keep him. That was obviously before Cristiano came back to the club. Now, in terms of attacking players and the pecking order, there's obviously one ahead of him again, or one more ahead of him. So it might be even harder. I would think that in January you can reassess it and do exactly like he did last season. And if by January he hasn't played enough or really doesn't feel it, then he will have a lot of clubs, including maybe still West Ham, for him to go to and finish the season like he did this season or last season.
Hungary against England, just a reminder, World Cup qualifier for you on Thursday, 2:45 Eastern on ESPN+. Ah, good old Bayern. Let's get everyone from Leipzig. There you go. That's their summer. Umekano. And, of course, Savica confirmed as well, making the move as Nagelsmann. Gav, this isn't great, is it?
Well, I mean... Alaba leaves and you add Upamecano, which, you know, short term you may say is a downgrade. Long term is obviously an upgrade, or that you hope is going to be an upgrade. Sabitzer, I think, is really, really important. Kimmich, of course, extended his contract. They're still waiting on Goretzka. You need, and I think Tolisso's out of contract in the summer as well. You need that extra body in midfield, and you picked him up for 50 million euros. You know, the rest of the team is what it is, but you know, you figure Musiala is going to play more important minutes. You're going to get another stellar season out of Lewandowski, at least judging from the start he got. And you know, you're in a solid position. And then you see where we are a year from now. Again, for them, having won so many titles in a row, having competed for the Champions League, having won the Champions League, you know, I think they feel that they're in a pretty solid place. I mean, they can go and bid for all those out-of-contract bargains next summer like anybody else can.
Germany in action, of course, this week. They take on Liechtenstein. Netflix first game in charge, 2:45 Eastern on ESPN+. Meanwhile, Juventus, of course, losing Cristiano Ronaldo in the summer. Buffon's gone as well, Demiral, Romero. They haven't been that busy with regards to getting players in. Gab Moiskin, of course, making that move back to Turin from Everton on loan. Locatelli, though, the big signing, I suppose, of the summer for them.
Yeah, Locatelli's the guy that's going to get people all excited in midfield just because he can actually pass the ball and has some personality, unlike the folks who played there last year. So I think that is a big plus. Allegri, I think, is very open about it. He was hoping to get another midfielder in. You know, he's not high on Archer or indeed Rabiot, probably even Bentancur too. You know, most of his midfielders. The Cristiano thing obviously impacts everything. But from their perspective, you know, they were certainly hoping to bring in a center forward to replace him, and not Moise Kean. Moise Kean is in. They see him more of a. Sees him more of a winger type than somebody who can lead the line. He's an interesting one because when he was at Juve, part of the reason they let him go is they were briefing that, you know, he was a bit of a head case and he wasn't serious about being a pro or whatever. Now they're all saying, oh, look, he's matured so much playing for Paris Saint-Germain and, you know, learning from, I guess he learned his professionalism. You hope he'd learned it maybe more from Mbappe than from Neymar. But they're sort of selling that as a plus. They got the kid Caio Jorge as well. So, you know, they feel that they have enough weapons to be competitive this season. But obviously, I think Allegri will also feel that they've missed out on at least two targets. And I wonder if, I wouldn't be surprised if we see them back in January just to round out the squad.
Weston McKennie remains as a Juventus player. Gav, of course, reports in the UK that he was offered to a number of clubs, including Burnley.
Yes, and here it's kind of interesting because I was told about the Burnley thing, and Burnley said, well, we stepped away the minute we realized that the intermediaries who were offering him to us, they're not actually his agents. It was other people. And this happens quite a bit in football where, well, you go to the club and you say, hey, do you want so-and-so? And how much are you willing to pay for? And if you have credibility, they say, yeah, we'd be willing to pay this much. We can do this contract. Then you go back to the club and the agents and say, ooh, we've got Burnley lined up for you, but you got to do the deal through us. So Burnley, credit to them, sniffing these people out. And so Weston McKennie stays where he is.
Let's just confirm, shall we, some of the other US international transfers that have taken place this summer. Matthew Hoppe has gone to Mallorca, Chris Richards to Hoffenheim. Meanwhile, Montpellier have got Nicholas. And for a lot more on that, be sure to check out Football America's Seven Herc breaking it down. The latest edition will stream on Thursday on ESPN+. Norway against the Netherlands, meanwhile, scoring so many games for you over the next few days. That game live on ESPN2. Coverage starts at 2:30 Eastern.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Let's get more reaction to now what's going on with Saul and that possible move to Chelsea. Jules, what's the latest?
Well, it seemed, Dan, that actually we were talking about timings and when the paperwork was sent over to be done to the English FA, and it seems that actually the Saul deal is happening, that it was all done in time. And that he will come to Chelsea. We know that it's a loan with a fee, and that Saul, who Tuchel really wanted, is happening, which could mean that maybe the Griezmann deal to Atletico is also back on track. I think El Mundo Deportivo in Spain right now are saying that there's a little extension that has been given for that deal to happen. So, I mean, I know we've said yes and then no and then yes again, and we're all a bit lost, but. You know, if you get a bit more time and enough time, maybe they can still happen.
Saul doesn't go in necessarily to Chelsea, though, to start straight away, no, Gab?
No, I think he's very happy with what he has in Jorginho, Kovacic and N'Golo Kante. But again, you're going to need more than three central midfielders who you trust and who fit your system. And obviously, you know, Chelsea had high hopes for Billy Gilmore. They still do, but he's on loan now. And I think you feel a lot more confident with Saul in the mix. Because remember, Conte's older. Jorginho's had a long season. He's also older. Conte's also had some injuries before. So, you know, you're getting a guy who's battle-hardened, plenty of Champions League experience. And you know what? If you like Saul, and it's easy to forget this, but when Saul was 18, 19 years of age, you know, he was the next big thing. Things stalled for him last season at Atletico Madrid. But, you know, it's almost like a try before you buy situation. You know, you've got him here for a year. If it works out, then you have the option to keep him around. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think he's still only 26 years old. So, you know, he's got some miles left in the tank.
Why did it stall for him, Jules? Because as Gav was saying, so much expectation around him. Big favourite of Simeone's. What went wrong?
It's a good question again, because like Gav said, there was a time where it was so good for that team, so important in everything that Atleti were doing. And then maybe there's a point where, I don't know, he fell out of favour a bit with El Cholo. Maybe his qualities and maybe he's a bit more... He wanted to attack a bit more attacking than what Atleti were doing. It's funny because you struggle to see. He looks on paper so perfect for Simeone and Atletico Madrid, and he showed it in the past too. But the fact that for the last 2 years, really, he hasn't really improved that much, hasn't had a big part to play in the team's performances, not a key player anymore, not even a starter, to be fair, for most of last season. Maybe the attitude was not right. Maybe he fell out with Simeone. But something clearly happened, because there's no way 3 or 4 years ago he was that good and then hasn't really improved since.
Thank you very much, boys. Well, that is it. As it stands, that brings us to the end of today's show. Of course, Antoine Griezmann's future remains slightly up in the air. Stay tuned. Extra Time is next, and we will give you the latest as and when and if we hear about whether or not he's returning to Atletico Madrid. Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. We're recording this on 6:30 our time, so the transfer window has been shut for, 37 windows now. And we still don't know what Antoine Griezmann is doing. We'll tell you when we hear, if we hear. But we'll go through this. Gab, wouldn't have other clubs been more happy if PSG had accepted the 200 million euros for Mbappe, considering the fact that it's most likely that it'll go there for free anyway, and Real enter the summer 2022 with 200 million euros in the bank to spend on top players?
Yeah, 200 million that they can just spend on free agents, but as far as the other clubs are concerned, then if they had paid for Mbappe, then it would have been Paris Saint-Germain with those 200 million pounds to go and spend on free agents, like, say, Paul Pogba, for example. So I'm not quite sure. You know, it's not like the money gets burned and doesn't get spent. I mean, Paris Saint-Germain could have spent that money on free agents just as much as anybody else.
90 seconds to go, apparently, Shaq.
What?
Until the Griezmann extension stops.
Griezmann has a sledgehammer right now, breaking on every door he can find.
You know what they've done? He'll be lying in his bed and he'll have set up one of those little things that just trigger everything, with a big sledgehammer at the top.
Right. What the hell are you talking about?
Well, do you know what you call, you know, the films?
Yes.
And everything triggers another.
Like Wallace
reaction.
And Gromit, things like that.
Yeah.
The Goonies.
Yeah.
But why would he want a sledgehammer to fall on his head?
I'll just finish it all. I'm just staying here.
Wow.
I'm staying in Barcelona.
Okay.
The things that go through my head now.
I know, Steve. It's incredible. And they're the things that you let us hear. Imagine what's going on with the stuff that you don't let us hear.
I shouldn't say that. Imagine the things where you go, I shouldn't say that.
I know. Hey, boy, did you see Frank topless? You don't have Instagram, do you?
Oh, no, thanks. Whoa.
Frank. Whoa, look at that. Insta story, Frank, half naked, tensing, showing the six pack.
Oh.
We can't show it, apparently.
Well, no?
Because it's so R-rated.
Because it's too early. It's too early in the day. We have to wait until after 9 o'clock at night.
And Frank, you were trying to inspire people to go to the gym like you. Am I right?
Yes, you're completely right. And it's also because my book is coming out. Oh. So I say, you know, you have to step up, guys. September, school is about to start again. So you have to be fit. You know, you have to go back to work, you know, after holidays. So come on, guys, you know. and I try to encourage people to move a little bit. Like you, lazy people, like Dan Thomas.
I want to go to the gym. Stevie, does this encourage you to go to the gym? Seeing Frank half naked?
You just wait till you see it.
Nah, it's not happening.
What? You build one of those things that triggers something all along, and there'll be a sledgehammer right there. That's what'll happen.
Oh, God. I tell you, Dan, it was really not dedicated to Stevie.
Oh, really? Sure. No. Gab, why are Italian teams so willing to give their top players to rival Italian teams? From Cafu to Milan, Nedved to Juve, Pjanic, Benatia, Dzeko, and others. It doesn't make sense in another league.
Would you want a little Saul update first?
Yeah, go on.
Saul, Griezmann.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So it's being reported in Spain that all the paperwork has been submitted.
Hooray!
And it is currently being revised by La Liga. Now, not official yet.
Oh.
El Chiringuito reporting this, so make of that what you will. But credit where credit's due. The paperwork is in, according to them, and it is being revised. Not official yet because... Hey, look, it's Barcelona's paperwork, right? So
right,
it might
exactly.
take some time.
Imagine the dramatic music they'd have been using. But,
to answer your question, though, I think they're different cases. Because certainly I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Cafu was a free transfer. Pjanic had a release clause. Edin Dzeko had a year left on his contract and wasn't going to renew. And already had a bought deal and made a lot of money, and Roma were happy for him to go, and he had a deal in place with Inter. And so I think those are all different situations. I think in the end, you know, certainly in recent years, you've had a situation where Juventus have spent a lot more in wages than anybody else. And so it's very difficult for clubs to compete, because remember, we had situations like that of Chiesa or indeed Locatelli, where, you know, their contracts were gonna come to an end. The player said, no, I want to go to Juve. And he said, hey, look, how about we sell you abroad? Somebody can offer more money. And he's like, I want to go to Juve.
Mm.
And when that happens, you know, you don't want to lose a player on a free.
It would have been...
Hello.
It would have been better if he'd said German teams.
Right.
Because that's the craziest of them all. Because it's not only is it teams in the same league, but it's teams that are actually battling to win the competition who end up giving you all the players.
Red Bull Bayern now, isn't it?
It used to be Dortmund, now it's Leipzig.
Yeah, Bayern does that to everybody.
Did Barcelona have the worst transfer season of all time, Jules?
Nope. Oh. I mean, if you lose Messi to start with, I think even if you do other business alongside it or after it or around it, you've lost. I think you've lost. Losing Messi, you've lost the transfer window of all clubs together, maybe of all time too. On top of that, they did some good things. I mean, getting £30 million for Emerson Royale is like, wow, okay, well done. If you can get rid of Griezmann, as we said, and that could be important for them financially, even if it's crazy to give him the way they, to gift him even to Atleti the way they did. So, but yes, I'm sorry. Losing Messi, you lose the transfer window.
Sticking with Barcelona, Gab, can they avoid an AC Milan destiny and bounce back in 2 to 3 years' time with proper financial management?
Well, they're very different situations. I mean, AC Milan were bought by Elliott Management, an investment fund. They're businessmen. Money's not a problem for them. Financial fair play was a problem for them, and they decided to respect it, and they invested and they turned it around. Barcelona, I think, is a different animal because all they can do, if they want to raise money, they either have to generate it themselves or they have to borrow it. And we saw that borrowing the money got them into a lot of trouble. So, I think in some ways it's trickier because obviously you got to generate the money yourself. But on the other hand, you're in a good place because the brand is so strong, because they will inevitably bounce back after, you know, when the Barcelona Museum reopens, when the Camp Nou reopens fully. And of course, they have La Masia, which, you know, still generates players for them, which they can then either put in the first team or possibly sell and get some money back. So they're very different situations, in my opinion. But yeah, of course, Barcelona will be back. You know, Barcelona are too big to fail. They're not going to become insolvent. This is an Enron we're talking about. Mm. I think there is a way back for Barcelona, no question about it.
Question for Jules. How would you rate the transfer of Camavinga to Real Madrid? We kind of did this on the show, didn't we, Jules? Who would you compare him to for people maybe you haven't seen him play?
Oh, that's a good one.
Jules always tells me it's a good question when he wants time to think.
It's not.
Jules always gives it a, and that's a really good question.
It's not that.
It's called a stalling tactic.
Or maybe he's just genuinely surprised that you asked a good question. I haven't thought of that.
Exactly. Because I'm waiting, and then it's a good question. I go, oh, okay, this is a good question. I feel like for your own confidence as well, I need to tell you that.
It's not even my question, is it?
Totally off guard with a good question.
You could just read that. You read that question very well, Dan.
you read it really well, and whoever sent it was a good one. So yeah. I rate the transfer highly because he was really coveted by a lot of clubs, including PSG. So in a way, Real Madrid got one. Onto PSG after the Mbappe deal that didn't happen. In terms of who plays like, it's hard to tell because he's such a complete player. I guess someone like Seedorf, who obviously played for Real Madrid as well, in the sense that there's nothing he cannot do. But Rijkaard was slightly still more defensive, I think.
Wow.
And Rijkaard was really a centre-back who played in midfield. Whereas Camavinga is gifted technically, like Seedorf was. Really, I can't stress it enough that with the ball, he's so, so good. And then he's got all the rest around. So I would probably say that, but Real Madrid fans will see there's something special there. But again, give him a bit of time. He's only 18 years old.
Frank Jules said he's nothing like Rijkaard. You idiot. Oh, that's a bit harsh.
Yeah, but Juice wasn't born when Rijkaard played, you know, at his best. That's why he doesn't know him. That's why he's talking nonsense. I saw Rijkaard playing in the 80s, and I tell you, the guy was going forward like with Ruud Gullit. That was something at Milan or with the national team. It's why I compare, because Camavinga is also a tall guy. I think he's going to get stronger. And he can carry the ball forward for sure. And that's the first name who came up. Of course, there is some others. I think Seedorf was more technical. He was more number 10 than Camavinga is.
Stevie, can you give me some dramatic music or dramatic noise?
Dun, dun, dun.
Gab, what's the Griezmann latest?
Griezmann latest is that the deal is not done. Oh. But it is alive, and again, I'll be straight up about this because I've sent some messages, but and Chiringuito seem to be doing this sort of second after second. So they're saying that they've been in touch with Griezmann's people, and they think everything is going to be okay. Take that for what it is. Still no official confirmation yet, but they seem confident.
How would you sum that up musically, Stevie?
What?
Yeah, I agree with that one. You know, it's quarter to one in the morning. You know, we're not going to spend the all night long, you know, to wait to see if Griezmann is signing for Atletico Madrid or not. You know, who cares? You know, there is some other people in a worse condition. You know, okay. Send the music and we all go to bed. Wow. Okay, bye bye.
Craig Burley, everyone. Thank you very much. we've got so many more questions, Frank.
Okay, whatever.
Gab, Ronaldo's Juventus legacy is going to be losing the top scorer to Quagliarella and Ciro Mobley, getting knocked out of the Champions League by Ajax, Lyon and Porto, scoring 30 penalties, losing a 9-year Scudetto dynasty to Inter, and then forcing Juventus to sell him. Wow.
That's all Ronaldo's doing?
Wow.
Whoa.
That's from honest Ronaldo fan.
Yeah, that guy really doesn't like Ronaldo. look, said this many times. That is a really, really harsh judgment. I think with hindsight, if they go back, they don't do it again. I don't think it's because of Cristiano, but it's because if you have Cristiano, you need to use him a certain way. And incidentally, Cristiano can't carry an entire team on his own. Nobody can. Messi can't do it either. You know, this isn't basketball where Wilt Chamberlain scores 100 points. I know I'm really dating myself. That was before I was even born. So I'm sure you come up with a better analogy. But Juventus made a number of big mistakes. And in some of those games where the Champions League games that you mentioned, Cristiano did play badly, certainly against Porto when they got knocked out last year. That was the case. But in other situations, they wouldn't even have been there. And I'm thinking of like the Atletico game, if Cristiano hadn't come up big in those games. So I think it was a collective failure. But I think Cristiano, for his part, as an individual, did his part. And by the way, the stuff about him waiting until the end to decide he wants to leave and thereby screwing things up for the club, that's a false narrative as well. Oh. He made it very clear back in June, just that right now it suits everybody, from Manchester United with Solskjaer pretending that he didn't know that Cristiano was available, to Juventus saying, oh, look, he left us in the lurch. We didn't know he wanted to leave. No, they maybe didn't know he had a buyer, but they did know that he wanted to leave. He's always been pretty straight about what he wanted to do, and he's been like that throughout his career.
Dan, have you ever won an argument with Craig? I think if I ever won an argument, there's no way he would admit that. Correct. I won that.
Not a chance.
Said, yeah. Argument. I think that's where we're at. Frank, what's the latest on Griezmann?
I can't stop asking.
I read something about Griezmann. Do you know that? I know a journalist living in Madrid, Fred Hermel, a French guy, yes, working very close to Real Madrid. And he said that, in fact, Griezmann has been keeping on calling Koke for weeks to an Atletico player to say, please, bring me back. Make sure I call Simeone and make sure that he brings me back to Atletico. But so far, we have no news. You know, I'm getting stressed, you know, because I don't know if I'm going to go to bed tonight. Griezmann, what's going on for Griezmann, guys? You know?
Oh, dear.
Oh, my God.
Just read. I'm just sweating. Read your book, Frank. That'll put you to sleep quickly.
Such a bad person. You're such a bad person.
That is it.
And if that doesn't work,
yep,
you get a week in traction.
dear me. Don't get this at Sky transfer deadline.
So what do we do? What do we do?
Go to Gab on Griezmann.
Oh no!
Do the music. Do the music, Steve.
Dun dun dun. Dun dun
dun. Okay. So Gianluca Di Marzio and others reporting that La Liga only received Antoine Griezmann's contract at 11:58 local time, which is 2 minutes before the transfer deadline. Evidently took time for the paperwork and everything. But as of right now, it looks like this deal is done.
Yeah!
So Saul to Chelsea, Griezmann, which we know is done. Griezmann,
Rodrigo Madrid,
and the one you're waiting for, Luke de Jong, to Seville.
We can go to bed. We can go to bed.
Bonsoir, that is it. We're done. Thank you very much, guys. ESPN FC. Then
bonsoir.
Yeah, did as well.
That's good night, isn't it?
I just thought it was odd. You just threw in a French.
Yeah. Well, because it goes to bed. I was just connecting nicely. So with
only French people go to bed.
Two French people.
What about Gab?
Oh, Gab doesn't sleep. He's too excited.
Gab's staying up to talk to Griezmann.
Exactly.